Today's shiur is in Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Yud. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. In our previous Shiur, we started a series of Maimros of comments made by Rova, as is indicated by a triangle whose point is facing downwards. The last comment that Rova made involved a topic known as Palginon Dibura, and the example that was used was an issue of illicit relations involving what's called Ploni Rovoi Liritzoni, a homosexual relationship where a person says, so-and-so had relations with me, and I was a willing partner. Being that Mishkav Zohar is a severe violation of Torah law, a person is not believed, according to what Rava says, concerning information that is self-defamatory. Hence, the information the person said regarding the action, regarding the other individual that so-and-so had these illicit relations, that information is accepted. Hence, the speaker and a second and a third party, an outsider, can join up and serve as a set of witnesses to testify against that party. The information that the speaker said about himself, there's a rule, Odom Korov Eitzel Atzmo, a person is considered a relative and hence not acceptable as a witness, Eitzel Atzmo, with regard to himself, a person is related to himself. So any defamatory information that a person says about himself is automatically not accepted. However, that doesn't mean we reject everything the person is saying, hence the information he says about the other party is accepted. With that in mind, we continue with a second comment of Rava. The words with which we'll be starting are the last two words on Tes Amud Beis, Omar Rava, and at that point you see Rava's name in the inverted triangle because this is part of the series of Rava comments, and in our marking system, as you're already familiar from all of the introductory information, geometric forms signify a series. So Rava says the following case, Ploni Bo Al Ishti, someone testifies that so-and-so had relations with my wife. Hu v'acher mitstarfim lehorgo, avolo lehorgo. The information that the husband says about that outsider, or the person that had relations with his wife, is listened to. It serves as testimony. Provided the husband and an outsider testify to that effect. The result being that you have two witnesses on the fellow who came on his wife, the paramour, and he will be put to death because of the severe violation involved in extramarital relations on the part of a woman. And the other point that's made here is that the wife is not put to death. Why is the wife not put to death? Because the information that that would condemn the wife is provided for by the husband, as well as the second witness. But a husband is related to the wife. That's a relationship. That's a korov, and a korov is posoliedus. Hence, we see that as far as the information the husband is sharing with us, palginon dibura. We split the information. The information he says regarding the paramour, that we accept. The information that he says regarding the wife, we don't accept. So the Gemara goes on and says, "My komash malon." What is Rava informing us over here? The mefalginon dibura, that we split his information. Hainu hach. That's the same as the case that Rava said just before, the case we opened up with in our introduction to today's shiur. What is the necessity of teaching the principle twice? So the Gemara answers, Mahu detema. Had I had just the first case, I would have thought the following. Odom koroiv etzel atzmo amrinon. Etzel ishtoi loy amrinon. That a person is considered a relative with regard to himself. And hence, in the first case, we said what we did, namely that the second party, the party that had relations with the speaker, is put to death, and we accept his information with regard to the fellow who came on him. But as far as himself being considered a Rasha, because of his saying that he did it willingly, we don't accept that. However, Eitzel Ishto, this was the Havamina, that we would not say Odom Korov Eitzel Ishto, and just like he would be believed on the Ploni to have him killed, so too with regard to the wife. Komash Malon, the Gemara, this is the reason for the second Rava comment, to come to tell me that we do not kill the wife. Let us see the Rashi. Eitzel ishto lo amrinon, odom korov le'inyan palginon dibura. We would not say that he's considered a relative with regard to this issue of splitting of testimony. And since we do believe him with regard to killing the fellow, the man that had relations with his wife, I would have thought without the second Rava that we would kill her as well. Komash Malon, that's what the second Rava teaching comes to say, that we do not kill the wife. The Omar Rava, another Rava comment. Ploni bo al naro hamurasa. Notice we've inserted a little aleph here because there are going to be two parts to this Rava teaching. If someone comes to testify that so-and-so had relations with a naro hamurasa, this is a girl who's considered, who had erusin or kiddushin, who is 12 and a half, and he testifies about so-and-so that had relations with her, v'huzmu, and the witnesses that testified to that effect were found to be edim zomimim. The rule concerning edim zomimim, it's a form of lying, if you will, but it's a special category, and the Torah says what they planned to do to the defendant happens to them when they're exposed. And in edim zomimim, their exposure is through a second pair of witnesses testifying. How can you, the first pair, possibly testify to what you're saying when you were with us at that time in another place? So, as we said a moment ago, the first pair of condemning witnesses will suffer the penalty that they wanted to inflict on the defendant. As a result, what were they trying to do to the Na'ara Marasa? So they were trying to see her killed. So we say over here, the witnesses, the liars, are Neherogin. However, the Ein Mishalman Mamon, there's no money paid. What's the money that one would have thought should be paid? The money concerns the ksuba that they were trying to see to her loss. Namely, if she was a married woman who was involved with illicit relations, she loses her ksuba rights. These witnesses testified that so-and-so, and they specified someone's name, had relations with a Na'ara Hamurasa, but they didn't specify who the woman was. So the result of their testimony is they get killed, but because they try to see to it that the man that had relations with the Naam Rasa should die. However, there is no, the Ein Mishalmin Mamon, the Gemara says, Rava says. Why is that? Because they didn't mention the name of the woman. So we don't know who, we don't know which Nara Hamurasa they were trying to cause loss to. However, if these witnesses say that so-and-so had relations with Bito Shaponi, notice this is the Bey's comment, that they had that so-and-so had relations with the daughter of so-and-so, specifying the girl, the woman, the Huzmu, and then they are exposed as Edim Zoyumim, Neherogin, Umishalman Mamon. They will die, but before that, they will have to pay money to the because of the ksuba that they were trying to cause the woman to lose. Mamoin loze, unefoshois loze. The mamon is, this by the way, is a comment that we saw on the previous Omid, that if the death penalty and the financial issue are focused on the same party, then we say we carry out only the more stringent penalty, namely the death penalty, and there's no financial fine imposed or need to pay that's imposed. However, where the death penalty is a result of one party and the financial issue is a result of a second party, as is the case over here, so we say that they are penalized with both of them. In this case, the death penalty is a result of what they're testifying about, the man that had relations, and the woman as well. And the financial issue, in terms of the ksuba loss, this is something that, since we're dealing with a Nara Hamurasa, this value would have been due to her father. And the loss that they were trying to impose by saying that the woman was behaving illicitly with the man, this Naam Rasa had relations with another man, would have caused her the loss of the ability to sell her ksuba and benefit by the income she would have derived from those options, but that income would have gone to her father. Hence, these Edim Zomimim are going to suffer both. As we just said, Nefoshos Lazer, the death penalty they get is because what they were trying to impose to the man and the woman that had the relations, and the financial issue as a result of the loss they were trying to cause to her father. The Omar Rava, Ploini Rava Hashor, the Huzmu. Two witnesses come and testify that so-and-so had relations with an animal, and they didn't mention the name of the owner of the animal. Relations with an animal is also punishable by death according to Torah law. Neherogin, the Ein Mishalmin Mamon. These witnesses, since they were shown to be Edim Zomimim, they suffer the penalty they tried to impose on the defendant. Hence, they will be killed. The Ein Mishalmin Mamon, however, there's no money loss that they will have to pay for, and the reason for that is that what would have been had we, they didn't mention the name of the owner of the animal. They just said that so-and-so had relations with an animal, but they didn't say whose animal. In the case that we had known whose animal it was, so the animal would have been killed as well, and that would have been a loss to its owner. However, since they didn't mention the owner's name, therefore, these Edim Zomimim will not have to pay money themselves. A second case, as you can see, noticed by the little base, Shoro Shoploni, if they said that so-and-so had relations with the animal belonging to so-and-so, Vuhuzmu, and then they're found to be Edim Zomimim, Neherogin, Umishalman Mamon, they will suffer the death penalty because of what they tried to do to the man that had relations with the animal, and Umishalman Mamon, and they pay money to the owner of the animal because as a result of their testimony, the animal, if their testimony had been accepted, the animal would have been killed and serve as a loss to its owner. Mamon lozeh unefashos lozeh. And the reason we can impose both penalties is, as we said before, the mamon is going to be paid to party A, and the nefashos is a result of what they were trying to testify regarding party B. Ha su lomali hainuach. What do I need this additional teaching of Rava for? We had the same principle taught just before in the case of Ploni Ba'al Nara Hamurasa. The more answers, the reason we introduced this additional case of Ploni Rava Hashor is Mishum Deka Boi Bayo Iluya. Because regarding the case of Revias Hashor, the relations, the sexual relations with an animal, regarding that topic, Rava had a question on it. So as a lead-in to his question, he mentioned this additional case. Even though the principle of that case could have been derived from the case just before involving the Ploni Bo Al Nar Amurasa, De Bo'i Rava, and hence we now see the question. We've marked this with a triangle, a dashed triangle, to indicate it's part of the series, but we changed the form of the triangle a little bit by having a broken form around it as opposed to a solid triangle, because this is not a straight out comment of Rava, but rather a question. The question is as follows: Ploni Rava Shori. A person testifies that so and so, he and another witness, two witnesses, say that so-and-so, mentioning someone's name, had relations with my animal, Mahu. What is the din in this case? And we'll present this as an Aleph O'Doma Bayes structure, a question with two sides to it. So the first side, Mi Amrinon Odom Korov Eitzel Atzmoi, V'ein Odom Korov Eitzel Mamono. Do we say that a person is considered a relative with regard to himself, as we saw in the case on Daf Tes Amud Beis, where a person said, I had homosexual relations willingly with so-and-so, where we saw that the information he said about himself is not accepted, and therefore he's not considered a Rosh, and therefore he could testify about the other party. However, when it comes to a person's possessions, we say, Ein Odom Korov Eitzel Mamono. And therefore, the information that he says about the animal, his own animal, that he had relations with his own animal, he said that relation, he had so-and-so had relations with his own animal, Ploni Rava Shori. And as a result of Ein Odom Korov Eitzel Mamono, the animal will be killed, will accept what he says, Oy Dilma, or possibly Amrinon Odom Korov Eitzel Mamono. We say that a person is considered as if he's related to his mamon, and just like we saw in the cases before, where the issue of kurva of being a relative came up. Therefore, the information on the relative was not accepted, and if that be the case, so the animal would not be subject to its death penalty as a result of its being involved with these with relations with a human being. Boser Dabaya Hoder Pashta, after he raised the question, he then resolved it. Adam Korov Eitzel Atzmoi, a person is considered a relative with regard to himself, as was featured in the case of Tes Amud Beis. The Ein Adam Korov Eitzel Mamono, however, a person is not considered a relative with regard to his possessions, and as a result of that, if he were to testify, Ploni Rava Shari, that so-and-so had relations with my animal, if there are two witnesses here, so the Ploni, that person would suffer the death penalty, as well as the animal, even though one of the witnesses, in the case of the animal, is in fact the owner of that animal. Makos b'shloisha, the Mishnah mentioned, as part of the list of different events that require three dayanim, the case involving a penalty of Malkos, of lashes, requires three judges. So from where do we know that? Minohani Mili, from where do we know that you need three judges for these cases? Omar Ravuna, Omar Kro. The Pasuk, in the context of Malkos, says, Vishoftum. And they, plural, they shall judge, equals Shnayim. V'ein Beis Din Shokel, and we do not have an even number of dayonim in a beis din. Therefore, moisif an alem oid echad hare kan shloisha. And therefore, thereby we come to the number three. Well, the Gemara asks, if we're going to be focusing on the issue of pluralness in this case, so then there are other plural words that one finds in this pasuk. The pasuk being Dvarim Perek Chof Hei Pasuk Aleph, and it says in that same pasuk Vihitzdiku, which is Shnayim, Vihirshiu equals Shnayim. Hare Kan Shiva. So then, according to our mathematics, we will have had three words, each one minimum plural of two. That's a total of six. And you can't have an even number. Therefore, are you going to tell me that we need seven judges for Malkus? So the Gemara answers these last two expressions of Vihitzdiku and Vihirshu, Hahu Miboya Le Kideula. These are needed for Ula's teaching. Before we go on in the Gemara, let us point out that at this point the Gemara is going to be starting a long answer, as indicated by the encircled tuf that's to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text between the Gemara and the Rashi, with a dashed vertical line. All of this indicates a long answer. As we start the answer, we're going to notice also at a bracketed section. And the reason for that is the contents of the information in the brackets is something that needs correction, and the corrected version will appear right after the brackets. So, upon the first reading, we recommend skipping the bracketed section just to preserve the proper flow of ideas, and then go over the bracketed section. So, as we said, the terms Vihitzdiku and Vihirshiu are needed for another halacha. Before we go on in the Gemara, let us say a word about that other halacha. There are situations when, in the course of testimony, the principle of Kasher Zomam cannot be carried out. The principle of Kasher Zomam states, as we said already today a couple of times, that witnesses that are found to be Edim Zomamim, they're found to be liars based on the fact that they were somewhere else with other people they were somewhere else at the same time that they claim the testimony to have taken place, the issue to have taken place, they get what they try to give to, what they try to testify or give to the party, the defendant. In certain situations, that penalty cannot be carried out. One example is if they testified about a individual that he is a Ben Grusha, that he is the son of a Kayin who married a divorced woman. The Gemara in Makkah says that we do not make those Edim as well, we don't convert them into Bnei Grusha. What do we do with them? We give them lashes. They get malchus. Where do we see in the Torah that witnesses upon whom we cannot carry out the principle of kasher zomam, that instead they receive malchus? That will be learned from these psukim. The psukim that are featured in at the beginning of Perek Chof Hei in Sefer Dvorim. We will read the psukim so that you just hear get a flavor of them before we go on in the Gemara. Pasuk Aleph says, "Ki yeh riv bein anoshim," when there is a controversy between people, "V'nikshu el hamishpat u'shvatum," they go to be judged, "V'hitzdiku es hatzadik v'hirshiu es harosha." Those terms are going to be the subject of our Gemara, so we will refrain from translating them at this point. But the idea is the tzaddik is vindicated and the rasha is condemned. V'hoya im bin hakoyis harasha, and in the event that the rasha becomes chayev malchus, v'pilu hashofet v'hikol lefonov Kidei Rishasu b'mispar. And the judge sees to it that the defendant gets his lashes. Arboim yakenu lo yosif. He is to get a number of lashes that is up till the number of 40, namely 39 lashes, and no more. Pen yosif lahakoisoi al ele makarabo v'nikla achicha le'enecha. And the Torah's warning not to give more lashes than is necessary, so as to prevent the individual from being disparaged too much. Each one of these phrases in the psukim here is addressed by the Gemara in detail. As we turn back to the Gemara has answered that as far as counting the Tzdiku and Virshu as sources for more numbers of judges in the realm of Malkus, that cannot be done because these words, the Tzdiku and Virshu, are used for something else. And that's what the Gemara says at the beginning of this long question, this long answer. Hahu miboyale kideula. The Tzdiku and Virshu are needed for Ula's teaching. The Omar Ula. Notice, we're now going to skip. Remez li edim zomimim she loikin minayin. From where in the Torah is there a remez? Is there an allusion to the fact that edim zomimim can be subject to the penalty of lashes, as we mentioned before, in the event that we cannot carry out the Ka'asher Zomam principle. Let's go back over the bracketed section, and you'll see how this opens up with a term that is incorrect. So after saying that we need them for Ula's teaching, that Ula, the Omar Ula, Remez li'edim zomim min haTorah minayin, where is there a Remez, a mere allusion, as opposed to something that's black and white? Where is there a mere allusion to Edim Zomim in the Torah? So the Gemara reacts immediately. Remez li Edim Zomimim. You're looking for some type of mere hint to Edim Zomim in the Torah. Why are you looking for a hint? V'haksiv. The Pasuk says outright, Kashir Zomam. The Pasuk has as an overt mentioning of Edim Zomimim and the penalty that they receive. So what could Ula's question have possibly been? Ella, the accurate question is as follows. Remez li edim zomimim sheloikin, that they receive malchus minayin, and we've dashed underlined shelokin so as to emphasize that this is the main point. The answer, dichtiv, vihitzdiku es hatzadik vihirshu es horosha. That's what the Pasuk says. Now, if we translate the Pasuk, it will cause a tmiha, a reaction of wonderment to it. And that's what we have to do because the Gemara is going to react thusly until it gets to the point where it finally explains what the real meaning of the Pasuk is. So the Pasuk says, after we ask the question, where do you see a remez to Edim Zomim in the Torah? Dichtiv. We read the Pasuk, V'yitztiku es hatzadik v'yirshu es harosha, Mishum dehitztiku es hatzadik v'yirshu es harosha, V'hoya im bin hakois harosha. The Pasuk base that we had read before says that in the event that the Rosha becomes chayev in Malkus, that the defendant is found to be guilty, and he will get Malkus. What in the world does that have to do, does the receipt of Malkus have to do with the fact that the person who was innocent was found to be innocent, and the person that was guilty was found to be guilty? What does the innocence and the guilt have to do with the receipt of Malkus? Let us glance in Rashi, where we have an asterisk. It's a few lines, it's several lines down from here, toward the lower part of the narrow section. Tzidkas tzadik loma huskaro kan. Why does the Pasuk make any mention of the vindication of the righteous one, of the innocent one? V'chi mishum tzidkas tzadik mischayev rosh hamalkus. And is it because he is found to be innocent that the guilty one is going to receive malkus? So Rashi goes on to say, Elo vadai edim remizi hacha. Rather, in this Pasuk there is an allusion to the witnesses. De'a edim koi hai ve'im v'hoya im bin hakoi sorosha. the issue in the beginning of Pasuk Beis, it says, and if he is found to be someone worthy of Malkus, is not a reference to the defendant. It's a reference to the witnesses. Let us now turn back to the Gemara. Ela, Edim, Shehir Shiu Es HaTzadik. Rather, these psukim in Devarim, Perikov Hei, Pasuk Aleph and Beis, are describing the following. Edim that came in and lied, and hence attempted to condemn the innocent one. The Asu Edi Achrina, Edi Achrini, and other witnesses came in. A second pair of witnesses came in. Vehitzdigu Es HaTzadik Demei Korah. And they vindicated he who was originally, in fact, innocent. Veshavinu lahanoch rishoyim, and they, the second witnesses, made these, the first witnesses, guilty. And the pasuk continues, v'haya im bin hakoyis harasha, which tells me that these witnesses that have now been exposed as being evil, they are worthy of the malchus penalty. And hence we see the end of our long answer. The question had been, where is there an allusion to the Torah that Edim Zomimim, in the event that we cannot carry out Kasher Zomim, that they will be guilty, they will receive a Malkus punishment? We see that from Pasuk Beis. The Gemara asks, V'tepuk le miloisane, why do we need this Pasuk when you can learn out from the Pasuk that says, Lo sane bereacho eid shoker, where the Torah says, warns against serving as a lying witness against one's fellow man. And lo isane is a negative commandment, and generally speaking, those mitzvahs in the Torah that are stated in the negative, for example, thou shalt not eat nevela. If a person then goes ahead and eats nevela, animals that are not slaughtered properly, al pi din, he gets malchus. Of course, if he was warned by two witnesses and the witnesses saw him. So why do we not apply the same principle over here? The tape that, as a result of lo sane, similar to the do not eat nevela, do not testify falsely, why is that not the source of the malchus? Answer, mishum dehavile lav she'en bo imaise, because this is a violation in a non-active fashion. In other words, it's lacking a maise. As far as the Gemara here is concerned, mere speech, as is the case of witnesses who testify falsely, that does not involve an action per se. The whole lav she'en bo maise, and any violation of a negative precept in a non maise fashion, ain loikin olav. There is no malchus that is carried out on those types of violations. Hence, The relying on the pasuk of lo sane as a source of malchus would not be sufficient. However, since there is an additional pasuk, namely v'hoyo im bin hakoyis harasha, even though the edim zomimim were guilty of what's basically a lav she'en bo imaisa, they nevertheless will still get the malchus. Mishum Rabbi Shmuel Amru be'esri mushlosha. He said that Malkus is carried out by a court of 23. My time of the Rabbi Shmuel, what is the basis of his opinion? And that will be the subject of the Gemara right now, as you can see from our subject heading in the outside margin, the Nosei, my time of the Rabbi Shmuel, the Malkus B'chof Gimel, what is the reason for Rabbi Shmuel holding that Malkus cases are judged by 23? And in our Mivneh heading, we have featured a double underline, and you can see that Mivneh is the structural note, Mekoros le Malkus b'chof gimel dayonim, sources that are offered by different Amoroyim in the Gemara, that Malkus cases are judged by 23. And after that, we will see, after Rava brings his question, his source in, there'll be diamonds featuring two kushios al Rava, two questions on Rava's approach. So we open up with the first answer of Abaye, Omar Abaye, Asya Rosha Rosha Mechaive Misos. We have a word comparison, a gzera shava, from the topic of capital punishment, of death penalty. Siv hocha v'hoya im bin hakoyis ha-rosha. In the case of Malkus, you have the word rosha appearing. Uksiv hasam asher hu rosha lomus. In the case of capital offenses, you have also the word rosha. Ma lahalon be'esrim u'shlosha. Just like in order to be mechayev someone misis beizdin, you need 23. Af kan be'esrim u'shlosha. So too, in the case of Malkus, you need 23. Rava Amar Malkus b'moko misa oimedes. Rava says that Malkus is a form of misa. The Rashi has a very dramatic explanation to this, and it's such an accepted explanation. Tosis, after proposing some alternative explanation, says that the best way to go is with the Rashi explanation. So he says, the third line under the Gemara, Malkus b'moko miso medes, Rashi says, the kivon the ovar al azhoros baro. Since a person violated the warnings of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, someone had the audacity to violate a teaching of Hashem, a loisas of Hashem, roi hu lomus, he deserves to die. Umisazu knas olav hakosuv v'harehu keachas min amisos. And this death is something that the Torah warns about, and therefore the Malkus is like one of the other misos. V'chihechi deskilo b'fnei atzmo, osrefo b'fnei atzmo, v'herig b'fnei atzmo. Havinami Malkus Kachas Minamisas. Just like the other forms of capital punishments are each one on its own, so too Malkus is one of those, one of the list. We now go back to the Gemara. After Rava says his principle, Omar Rav Acha Brei de Rava de Ravashi, Ihochi, if Malkus is like Misa, then why is it that Malkus has certain attributes in the court procedure that other misos bezin do not have? In fact, in Malkus, we do not give Malkus without first going through a type of evaluation. Ihachi umdena lomali. Why is there an evaluation made concerning the defendant, whether he will be able to physically absorb the blows of these lashes, and if he's found to be physically incapable of absorbing the blows, we do not carry it out. The Gemara goes on, Limche vi moyes lemos. Let us beat him anyway, and if he dies, so be it. So he dies, because you're just telling me that Malkus is the equivalent of Misa. And as a result of that, you came to the conclusion that you needed 23. But if it's like Misa, just like in cases of Misa, the result is inevitable. He dies. We don't make any calculation. So too, by the Malkus, we shouldn't be making any evaluation. Omar Le, Omar Cross. So Ravashi answers, the Pasuk, though, insists upon this. V'nikle achicha le'enecha. And we saw that in the Psukim that we read before. That the Pasuk says that V'nikle achicha le'enecha. And that teaches us, ki mochis, when we beat him, agaba dechaye mochis. The lashes are supposed to be on a living person. In other words, if an evaluation is made, and we see that he will die as a result of the lashes, so then we're not really fulfilling what the Torah says. The Torah says the lashes are done upon a living person. Question, and this is another, this question will be a long question, as you can see from the kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text and the dashed vertical line that extends to the top of Yud Amud Beis. Elaha Desanya. We have a Tanaic source. As you can see, there's a few lines that are in a frame in our marking system. Tanaic sources are placed in frames. Amdu Lekabel Esrim. An evaluation was made that this person is physically capable of absorbing 20 lashes. Ein Makin Oisoi Elamakas Haruas Lishtalish. The number of Malkus that we carry out is a number that can be divided by thirds, or into three, units of three. The Kamohain, what number is that which could be divided into units of three closest to 20? Tamni, sorry, 18. So we'll give him 18 lashes. But now, if you're telling me that lashes are like Misa, and I'm bound by the Torah restriction that the lashes must be done on a living person. According to the case here, that they evaluated him, he'll be able to absorb 20 lashes. Why not do the following? Limche esrim v'chada. Give him 21 lashes. V'chimayas, and he'll die. We said he can absorb only 20, but when you gave him the 21st lash, the ha chado lemus, the ha he'll die through that one last lashing. However, when that last lashing was given, it was given he was still alive. The Ha'ki Machis, for when he was beaten or lashed, agabo, on the back of the chayi ka machis, it was carried out on someone who was still alive. We said he was evaluated to be able to survive 20. Very good. Give him 21. So after 20, he was still alive. He died at the 21st lash. So what? But when that lash was coming down on him, through which he died, he was still alive. So why don't we give him 21? Omar lay, Omar kraw. The pasuk says, "V'nikle achicha le'enecha," which means, "Achar sheloka," after he has been lashed, "Achicha ba'ina," we need him to be your brother, meaning a living person. After the lashing, we need him to be a living person, "V'leka," and he would not be in this case if you were to give him the 21. So, up till this point, we discussed the two opinions in the Mishnah regarding the number of judges required for lashings, 3 or 23. As far as the reason for the 23, we saw a couple of opinions. We saw Abaye and Rava giving sources. We now turn to the next section of the Mishnah, Ibur HaChodesh B'Shloisha. Let us glance at our topic heading in the outside margin. This is accompanied by a structural note as well, the Nosei Mivneh. Pirush HaMishnah, Ibur HaChodesh B'Shlosha. We're going to be explaining that phrase in the Mishnah. In the course of our Gemara, we're going to notice triangles and bow ties. The triangles are four deos shel Amoroyim, four explanations offered by Amoroyim to explain this section of the Mishnah that said Ibur HaChodesh B'Shlosha. We're also going to notice the bow tie, which is a bosis, la pirush, ba tanoim. Each amora, after offering his explanation, we will find a bosis, a basis for that explanation in Tanaic sources. So we'll have the triangle introducing the amora's opinion, and a bow tie bolstering that opinion by a Tanaic source. Before we go on in the Gemara, let us just mention three terms that we're going to be hearing several times. The three words are Chishuv, Kiddush, Ibur. Chishuv is a word indicating calculations. When dealing with the issue of adding a day to a lunar month, sometimes referred to as a Jewish calendar month, when deciding whether or not to add a day, calculations are necessary to be made. Rashi makes reference to the Gemara in Erechin that discusses the issue of the calculations. Later in this Maseches also mention is made of calculations, primarily in the case of extending a year. In this case, we're talking about calculations with regard to extending a month. The extension of a month is by one day. That's called chishuv. Another expression we mentioned, kiddush. Kiddush is a situation where Basin accepts witnesses that testify we saw the new phase of the moon, the Molad Halavona. A lunar month is 29, a lunar cycle is 29 and a half days plus 793 halakim. If witnesses come on what's called day 30, and the basin accepts them, so basin says, and day 30 is then declared as day 1 of the new month. That process involving the acceptance of the witnesses and the court declaration, Mekudosh HaChodesh, that's known as Kiddush. We might see another use of that term in the course of the Gemara as well. And the term Ibur is the situation, as we mentioned before, where a day is added to the current month. The classic case would be if you arrive, we reach day 30, and witnesses did not show up in Beis Din, indicating they saw the new phase of the moon. So day 30 becomes, in fact, day 30. It remains day 30. And the next day, which we'll call day 31, it becomes Rosh Chodesh. It becomes the day one of the new month. That is called Ibur. There are more details to what we've explained, but it's important to be aware of these three different expressions before one goes on in the Gemara, namely Chishuv, Kiddush, and Ibur. We turn to the Gemara. Ibur HaChodesh B'Shlosha. We've dashed underlined the word Ibur. That's the word that appears in the Mishnah. So the Gemara comments, Chishuv Lo Katani, Kiddush Lo Katani, Elo Ibur. The Mishnah does not say that Chishuv is with three. Chishuv, namely, that it's necessary to have three judges making the calculations whether or not to extend the month. That's not stated. Likewise, Kiddush Lo Katani. Rashi points out, Kiddush Lo Katani, and we see in the Rashi, the Nema, that we would therefore say, Tetzorech Shloisha Lekabel Edus HaChodesh Mibio Edim, that you would need three to receive the witnesses that saw the new phase, Veloimar Mekudosh Mekudosh, and then declare the new month to be sanctified. Neither one of those things are taught, rather, Ibur is what's taught. Ibur b'shlosha. So on that, the Gemara asks, Lo likdisha umemelo la'aber. Let us simply not declare it on day 30 as the new month. Day 30 then converting into day 1. Just let us remain silent. And on its own, day 30 remains day 30. That's umemelo. On its own, it becomes extended la'aber, whereby day 31, it will become day 1. Why then is it necessary to have three for the extension? There's no need to have anybody for the extension. If we remain simply silent on day 30, there's no court involvement. So day 31 automatically becomes one. As a result of this problem, Omar Abaye, and he's the first of four explanations, Tani, Kiddush HaChodesh. Change the language of the Mishnah. In other words, there's a mistake. The Tana made a mistake in reporting the word Ibur. It rather should have said Kiddush HaChodesh. The sanctification, as we mentioned before, we're talking about the receipt of the witnesses on day 30, and the based in declaring day 30 to become the new, really, day 1 of the new month. Tanyo Nami Hochi. In fact, there's a Braisa that supports Abaye's teaching. Kiddush HaChodesh. And we've dashed underlined that because that's what Abaye suggested should be the Loshon, should be the text of our Mishnah. This is not our Mishnah. This is an additional source, a Braisa source. And it says here that Kiddush HaChodesh ve'ibur hashana b'shlosha divrei Rabbi Meir. Omar Rava reacts and says, v'ho ibur katoni. But what about the word in our Mishnah? And Rashi points out that it can happen that a Tana makes a mistake, but he doesn't switch around words. The level of mistake is much less than a total word switch around. Hence, Ella Omar Rava. Rava gives us his approach. Kiddush b'yom ibur b'shlosha. Yom ibur is day 30. Why is it called Yom Ibur? Day 30 is the day that could have been the extension day of the previous month. If witnesses come on day 30 and the Beis Din accepts them, so then we are Mekadesh day 30 and it becomes day 1 of the new month. That's what Rava says here. Kiddush, the sanctification of the new month, B'yom Ibur, on day 30, is B'shlosha, provided you have three judges present for this to take place. Achar Ibur, Leko Kiddush. However, if nothing happens on day 30, Achar Ibur, after day 30, then there is no sanctification. In other words, if the month is extended, and day 31 becomes the day 1 of the new month, there is no sanctification recitation. Umoni, and who would be the basis of that? Rebbe Elazar Reb Tzadok, he. Desanya, we have a Tanaic source with him the featured Rebbe Lozer, Rebbe Tzadok Oimer, Im lo nire bismano, if the new phase of the moon has not been sighted on day 30, ein mekatshin oiso, then there's no sanctification. Shekvar kitshuhu bashomayim. In Shomayim, it was sanctified. Rav Nachman Omar, Kiddush Achar Ibor B'Shlosha, B'Yom Ibor Leko Kiddush. Rav Nachman presents an approach that is quite different than everything we've seen till now. Rav Nachman says that sanctification, declaration on the part of Beis Din, Mekudosh Mekudosh, of the new month takes place dafka, specifically on a month that is extended. That's Kiddush Achar Ibor. However, Kiddush on the day, it's on Yom Ibor itself, if it's a month of 29 days and day 30 becomes day 1, in that case, there is no necessity of having Kiddush, of having sanctification recited. Umani, and who is the basis of that opinion? Flimo he. Flimo is the author of that. Desanya Flimo Oimer. Bismanoi e mekachinoisoi. Shalo bismano mekachinoso. Bismano means on its official time. The usual time, the more common situation is having a 29 day month, and hence on day 30, the declaration of the new month is made. And according to Flimo, no formal declaration is made. There's no Mekudosh Mekudosh on day 30. Only in the case that the month is extended, then we do have the Mekudosh. Rashi mentions Kiddush a few lines down from here. Rashi says, Flimoi Oimer, Bizmanoi Ein Mekachinoso. Why is that? She'ein Sorach Lasus Chizuk Ledovar. Share Bizmano Bo. There's no need to have strengthening of the matter. Strengthening by way of an additional ceremony, additional court recitation, Mekudosh Mekudosh, when something happens on its expected time. However, when something happens on the unexpected time, then we have to strengthen it because it's the uncommon event. It needs strengthening, so to speak. Hence, Kiddush is done dafka in the situation that the month is extended. The next approach, Rav Ashi Omar, a fourth approach, Le'olam Chishuv Katoni, let us preserve the original reading and understanding, namely, calculations. Umay Ibor, let's correct what we just said. In fact, that was not our original understanding. It was proposed in the opening of the Gemara, but the original text of the mission was Ibor. In the opening piece of Gemara, the Gemara mentioned Chishuv Lo Katoni. Rav Ashi goes back to that and says, you should understand that as Chishuv, in fact. Calculations. That the calculations that would lead up to the decision whether or not to extend the month, that must be done by three judges. Umay Ibor, what is the understanding of the word that appears in the Mishnah text? Chishuv Di Ibor. Calculations with regard to extension of month. So why did the Mishnah use the expression Ibor? Maybe it would have been more appropriate to use the expression Chishuv. The Aidi, the Kaboi, Lemisni, Ibor, Shona. And since the Mishnah had to use the term Ibor with regard to extension of year, Tono, Nami, Ibor, Chodesh. Therefore, it used a similar expression when it comes to the issue of the month. The Rashi explains a little more extensively, and he says, Chishuv de Ibor, Lechashev im Yabruhu, to make a calculation whether or not to extend the month. Deilu Kiddush Sovar Tano Didon, the Lo Tzorach Lukdushi. According to this approach, Kiddush, sanctification, with regard to months, is not necessary. The Lo Tzorach Lukdushi, we said, Lo Mole Velo Choser. Neither the case of the full month, the 30-day month, nor the case of the 29-day month. Uchad Rebbe Lozer, Rebbe Shimon, the Kamon, as we will see shortly in the Gemara, according to Rebbe Lozer. The Aidi Ditoni, Ibor Hashana, and since the Mishnah taught Ibor Shana, the Havinami Chishuv the Ibor Hashana, which also involves calculations regarding the decision to extend a year by adding another Ador, Bahasam Lo Sagi Delo Toni Ibor. In the case of a year, the term Ibor had to be used. De amira boi shikachu ador hasheni l'shem ador. There, it's not a function of mere calculation. There, you have to have an announcement as well. An announcement stating that when you're coming to the close to the end of Ador, that a second Ador is going to be inserted into the calendar. The Ishaski, in the case of a year, if they remain silent, then and when you're approaching the end of your standard Ador, if there's no announcement made, Memela L'Shem Nisan Mikba, it will turn automatically into the month of Nisan. Therefore, in the case of a year, we're saying Ibur Hashanah means a declaration of extension, of added month is absolutely necessary. Therefore, Tonanami Gabi Chodesh, Ibur HaChodesh. Therefore, in the context of the month also, even though in the context of month no official announcement is necessary, as we just said, the same term though was used, Ibur HaChodesh. Vekari Onami L'Chishuv Ibur, and the term referring to calculations is used, the term for calculations is Ibur. And we're telling you here that you need to make a calculation with regard to the issue of extension, even in the case of a month. But as far as kiddush is concerned, that's not necessary. As Reb Elozer will teach right now. So we turn back to the Gemara. As we just answered that the term Ibur is used in the case of the month, because Ibur is used in the case of a year. Chishuv Chodesh in, Kiddush Chodesh lo. Calculations for extension of month, yes, you do need judges for that. However, Kiddush, sanctification of month, no, there's no necessity. Money, who would be behind such a teaching that when it comes to sanctifications of months, there is no necessity for that? Rebbe Elozer, he. Desanyo. Rebbe Elozer, Omer. Bein bizmano, bein shalo bizmano. Whether it be a month in which witnesses come on day 30, bein shalo bizmano, in a situation that they did not come on day 30, ein mekachin oso, there is no sanctification with regard to months. Shneimar v'kidashtem eshnas hachamishim shana. This pasuk is stated in the context of the Yovel year, on the 50 year cycle. The pasuk says there is a sanctification of year 50. Shonim atah mekadesh v'atah mekadesh chadashim. Because the pasuk said v'kidashtem eshnas, the emphasis on year, sanctification of years is something that takes place. However, it's not sanctification of months. Hence, we saw four approaches to explain the comment made by the Mishnah that Ibur HaChodesh B'Shlosha. As we go on in the Gemara, in the context of Ibur HaShana, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer B'Shlosha, U'B'Chamisha Noisim V'Noisim, we've written in the continuation of the Mishnah, V'Gomrim B'Zayin B'Shiva, with seven, Im Gomru B'Shlosha Me'Uberes. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel told us that Ibur Hashana, the decision involving extending a year, the calculations that lead up to that, and the declaration, starts off with three, possibly continues with another two with five, and in the case that they had to continue the calculations with more judges, the final decision is said in the presence of seven. On the outside margin, we have no say. We have a note here that Ibur Shana is until Yud Gimel Amud Beis. That means that for the next few Dapim of Gemara, we're going to be involved with the general topic of extension of years. That we call the Nosei Klali. The topic at hand is the Nosei Shitas Reb Shimon ben Gamliel B'Ibur Hashana B'Shloshu Chamisha V'Shiva. Looking into his approach that says extension of years is takes place with the presence of three, five, and seven judges. And a second topic that will be dealt with over here is U'Kaneged Mi HaMisparim Ho'elu, in honor of whom, or corresponding to whom, are these numbers, three, five, and seven. Turning to the Gemara, Reb Shimon Gamliel, we saw already said that B'Shlosha V'Chulei. Tanya, we have a Tanaic source. Ketzad Omar Reb Shimon Gamliel. b'shlosha maschilin, with three judges we start the process, u'b'chamisha noisin v'noisnim, and with another two discussion takes place, v'gomrim b'shiva. To illustrate this, the Brisa goes on, echad oimer leishev, u'shnaim omrim shelo leishev. We open up the issue of extension of year with three judges. One of them says, leishev, we need to sit and investigate and consider adding a month. Ushnaim omrim, two of them say, shelo leishev, there's no necessity in thinking about this and in calculating this, because there's no doubt about it. Why? It's poshut, it's simple to us that it does, this year does not need to be extended. Pesach will come out in the proper solar season, in the spring season, and hence there's no need to delay the year by adding another Adar. Botel yochid b'mi'uto. We say that the minor opinion is botel, is not reckoned with in the context of the majority opinion. And hence, if you had one saying that we need to investigate, we need to look into this, we don't listen to that, and there will be no added Ador. However, shnayim oimrim leishev ve'echod oimer shelo leishev. If two say we have to investigate this, we have to look in, we have to make calculations and consider the possibility of extending the year, and one says not necessary, mosifin aleim oid shnayim v'noisin v'noisin b'dovar. Since two said we have to continue making calculations, we add another two. So now there will be a total of five people involved. As they go on, we have five judges now. Shnayim oimrim tzricha, u'shloisha oimrim eino tzricha. If of the five, two are saying it needs to be extended, and three are saying there's no need to extend this year, so there will be no extension. Butlu shnayim b'miutan. The two, which are the minority, are botel, are void. Their opinion is not accepted. We go with the opinion of the majority, the three. However, shlosh omrim tzricha. Three say we have to continue making calculations and investigate the possibility of adding to this year. Ushnaim omrim einot tzricha. And two say no need to extend the year. Three, having said that we need to extend the year, so as a result of their opinion that we need to extend the year, mosifen aleihem oid shnayim, we add another two, shein haminyan pochus mishiva. When it comes to the final decision about adding to a year, the vote to add to a year must be done in the presence of seven. It appears, though, which is interesting to note here, that even though three said that we need to add, two having said no, we add another two for the vote. So even though three said it appears the year needs to be added, it doesn't necessarily mean that the year will be added to, because when you have a seven in total, it could be that there will, in the end of the picture, four will say it does not need to be added to. Hani shloisha chamisha v'shiva keneged mi. These numbers, 3, 5, and 7, who do they correspond to? Pligiba Rabbi Yitzchok bar Nachmeni v'chadime umanu Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. Rabbi Yitzchok and someone that was with him, and who was that? Rabbi Shimon Pazi. Now another version, the Amri Law, the alternative version, we've squiggled under Amri Law as we do in many cases where we have alternatives presented. The other version is Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, he is the one that says what is going to be said, V'chadimei, and someone with him, Umanu Rabbi Yitzchok bar Nachmeni. In fact, it's the same presentation, but just with the emphasis placed on the opening speaker opposite form. What are the two opinions, as far as the numbers are concerned? Chad Omar, Keneged Birkas Kohanim. The double underline is used to emphasize these two opinions for the number representation. One, the first opinion is, it corresponds to Birkas Kohanim. Birkas Kohanim is the Nesias Kapayim, characterized by three groups of brachas. The first group has three words in it, Yevorechecha Hashem v'yishmerecha. The second group has 5 words in it, and the third group has 7 words in it. V'chad omar, keneged shloisha shomrei hasaf, chamisha meroye penei hamelech, shiva roye penei hamelech. These are different groups of officials that served in a royal capacity. Tony Rav Yosef, Hani Shloisha v'Chamisha v'Shiva, Keneged Shloisha Shomrei Hasaf, Chamisha Meroye Penei Hamelech, Shiva Roye Penei Hamelech. Rav Yosef teaches the same thing in a Tanaic source as that which was featured a moment ago. There's a Rashi that points out at the very bottom, if you can find the asterisk, it says, V'ibor shana, the issue of adding a month to a year, mitaksise malchu shamayim, is from the taksise, from the different workings of the heavenly kingdom. Who? V'yashev seder hashanim al mechonim, to make sure that the calendar year is... is set up together in is synchronized with solar phenomenon. So this whole preoccupation with synchronizing the calendar year with solar phenomenon is associated with the heavenly kingdom, if you will. As a result of the issue of Malchus Shemayim, the heavenly kingdom, we correspond the numbers of judges involved with these calculations with royalty. And hence, these different types of royalty are featured Shomrei Hasaf and the Royei Penei HaMelech. Who they are, Rashi expounds on that in the last Dibur HaMaschil. Amalei, the word continues, Amalei Abai the Rav Yosef, Adhu Idno Mai Taima Lo Porish Lon Mor Hochi. Up till now, why did you not explain this pshat in the significance of the numbers? Amar Lehu, Rav Yosef answers, Lo hava yodana detzrichisewa. Mi bo isa minoi milsa velo amri lehu. I didn't know, he says, that you needed to know this explanation. Did you ever ask of me something and I did not offer you an explanation? With that, we conclude our shiur for today.